This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Perhaps no one company has affected a big city the way Amazon has affected Seattle. For every one job that Amazon produces in that city, an estimated 7 other jobs also pop up. The 33-building tech campus drove up the average income in the area. It helped foster a high-skilled economy. But then there's the downside: traffic, endless construction, a spike in homelessness, and the loss of modest-income communities. So would you like to see your town host Amazon's next headquarters? Many communities all over the country are hoping they will become the site of Amazon's announced HQ2. But as the saying goes, be careful what you wish for. Joshua McNichols and Carolyn Adolph are reporters with KUOW in Seattle. They launched a new podcast called Primed, and it explores how Amazon has changed their city. And they join me now. Carolyn and Joshua, welcome.
Hey.
Hello.
It's good to have you here. Carolyn, tell me more about this, because, you know, I mean, there's been a tech boom going on and off in the city of Seattle, right, since the 90s, right? It's been a tech hub for a long time and seen a lot of changes. Isn't that true?
It absolutely is. And that tech hub really started on the east side with Microsoft, you know, back in the 70s and the 80s. And it grew out there. But Amazon's different because it grew in the center of our city, basically, in the downtown area. And that made a lot of difference. The other thing, Frank, is the speed at which it happened.
Well, tell me a little more about that, Joshua, because if you're living in that city, do you notice while it's happening that something profound is going on?
Yeah, you notice it a lot. I mean, it's the metaphor I like to use is if you're driving along at 60 miles an hour on the freeway and a car hits you going 61 miles an hour, you feel a little bump, right? But if you're standing still on the freeway and a car hits you at 60, it's a real wallop. And that's kind of like what happened with Amazon. It hit us with such speed that our construction industry, our transportation system wasn't able to accommodate the quickness of the acceleration. And that has resulted in a lot of pain for some people.
Well, Carolyn, give us the scope of this rapid expansion. How big, how much, how many buildings, how many employees?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. It did happen in it feels like in the space of 5 or 7 years. But right now, Amazon has 40,000 plus workers. And I'm working here from its request for proposals document. And it says that it indirectly created another 53,000 jobs. And it says a lot of those jobs were tech jobs because so many companies came to be near the talent pool that Amazon had created. So, I mean, that's, you know, 90,000 employees that exist in the north end of your downtown where they really weren't there 10 years ago.
A lot of buildings and a lot of new office space, Joshua.
Yeah, 33 buildings right in this one little neighborhood. Mm. And, you know, they've sort of maxed out the capacity of this neighborhood with the construction projects that are on the horizon and the ones that are done now. And they're starting to snap up other office towers. There's a brand new office tower going up downtown, you know, in the next neighborhood over. And they leased up that whole thing. And they're leasing up floors in office towers on the east side, over closer to where Microsoft used to be. So they're looking around for more space now that they've sort of maxed out this one neighborhood.
But Carolyn, the Amazon is not new. They have also been in Seattle and in and around for a long, long time. When did this quick rise begin, and what was behind that?
What was behind that? You know, you could easily say that was the answer is probably Amazon Web Services, which, you know, became it's the cloud. But the answer is that Amazon was actually in an old repurposed medical building up on a hill 10 years ago when it announced it had outgrown that in just the span of a few years. And so around 10 years ago, there was a deal made to bring it downtown, and stuff was offered to them so that they basically came to understand that they could take over two neighborhoods, South Lake Union and the Denny Triangle. And so that happened. Construction began, but in the last few years, it just seems to have, I mean, we're talking about 33 buildings now. We're talking about 8.1 million square feet. A lot of that has come on in just the last few years.
I suppose a lot of people salivate over the economic opportunities of that, but when I hear it, I just think traffic. just traffic. And Seattle was not famous for having, you know, really great traffic anyway, Josh. But I guess people are now calling the whole section Amazonia. Is that right?
That's right. That's one of the nicknames for that neighborhood.
It's the radio-friendly nickname. And, of course, it creates traffic problems. You've got a podcast now called Primed, and you're talking all about it. And you talk to one truck driver in particular who give you some sense of what it's like to have to drive through Amazonia.
I'm still frustrated. You can hear it in my voice. I was trapped in this labyrinth of concrete, so it's literally like a rat going through a maze and trying to find that piece of cheese. There was really nowhere to go, so I was like breaking all kinds of laws just trying to get to somewhere that had a little daylight.
That's Dave Price, a truck driver who has to navigate Seattle's traffic, a clip from the new podcast Primed, out of NPR member station KUOW, and I am speaking with co-hosts Carolyn Adolph and Joshua McNichols. Carolyn, you know, I get that it happened quickly, but didn't the city kind of take control of this and realize that this is going to create traffic problems, et cetera? What's been the city's response, I guess?
Ha, I tell you, ha.
Yeah.
Well, in the first place, so we were married to the automobile. We rejected 40 years ago the idea of a light rail system, but 10 years ago, we realized we really should start to build something. The problem is that Amazon has grown so quickly now that there's no way that we can build a light rail alternative to get people off the roads in time to we can't get ahead of more growth. That's the problem. And you're seeing the population having to move farther and farther away from the center of the city in order to find an affordable place to live because the growth of these companies, especially led by Amazon, has created such an affordable housing crisis for us. So, no, I mean, we didn't prepare. We didn't build light rail when we should have 40 years ago. And we have also really struggled to build affordable housing because established neighborhoods often don't want affordable housing. And so there's a fight. There's a neighborhood-to-neighborhood fight over how this is going to get built.
We didn't build a light rail, with one exception, of course, and that would be Paul Allen, who is the first one to kind of reestablish himself, co-founder of Microsoft, and is ill-fated and unfortunately named Southlake Union Transit. Whose acronym provided at least some amusement, if not any relief from traffic. But that's a story for another time, because obviously it didn't really go anywhere and it didn't create any particular relief for the city. Let's talk more about housing, because this is the double-edged sword, right? People talk about the economy as though there's an economy improving, right? Income goes up, real estate goes up, business opportunities go up. And people get forced out of their homes, and this is the downside. I want to play a clip from a woman that you spoke with on your podcast, Primed. This is Deborah Bartlett, and she's a middle school teacher who lives in a subsidized apartment in the Southlake Union neighborhood.
And people say, oh, you live in Southlake Union. How's that? It's so vibrant, and it's so exciting, and it's so many things to do. And I say, yes, there's a lot of things to do down there, and I notice them. I feel like I'm an observer, where I walk by, I see people enjoying, it's not me, I'm not doing that, so I'm not really partaking.
It's Deborah Bartlett, a middle school teacher who lives in Southlake Union neighborhood in Seattle, part of the podcast Primed. I'm talking with the host, KUOW reporters and co-host Carolyn Adolph and Joshua McNichols. Joshua, tell me more about her story.
Well, we used to have lots of teachers who lived in Seattle, right? Now she has to live in subsidized housing. That's what's happening to a lot of people who are on that sort of lower middle class income area. And what she's describing there is really cultural displacement. Basically, when the world around you changes and you can no longer afford it, even if you manage to stake out some territory in that place where you used to live, it may be that the world changes so much you don't feel like you can participate in it as fully as you used to be able to.
And Carolyn, economic displacement, of course, the other important side of this story, the housing crunch. And it's affecting communities of color in the city, is it not?
It is. We've seen over the last several years that African Americans and other people of color are simply losing their position in the established neighborhoods where they had actually been, funneled just half a century earlier. Now people with money want to live there, and these people are being forced farther and farther away from job centers, and they're going farther south, often to places where they'll be less safe. They'll be less well served by community services. So these are real losses.
Austin Monique Subelbia is someone you talked with about this very thing. Let's listen.
It almost feels like a battle to like save our space or to like say I'm still here and I still exist. So I feel like it's like, oh, I'm being like taken over, but I need to like stop the uprising. Like I need to stand my ground and say I want to be on Beacon Hill, or we all deserve to be on Beacon Hill still with this and not be pushed out.
Austin Monique Subelbia, an American who is raised on Beacon Hill, the neighborhood of Seattle, and a clip on the new podcast Primed out of KUOW. I'm speaking with co-host Carolyn Adolph and Joshua McNichols. The other side of that is that if people with modest income are being forced out of the center of the city to the edges, people who are on the edges are being forced into homelessness. Joshua, that's also a growing problem in Seattle. Am I right?
That's right. We have the third largest homeless community in the country right now. So I think that's a per capita number, if I am not mistaken. But I mean, we see it everywhere. 3/4 of the people who are living on the street cite rising rents as the reason why they are homeless. So,
well, I looked too, and I saw it in at least one piece. Amazon offered to put up $30 million for a new homeless shelter. And it seems like, well, okay, but we could address the root causes of homelessness. And therein lies the problem. If you ask big companies to put up the money to help subsidize modest income housing, they'll say, I'll find me a city where I don't have to pay that kind of money. Is that some of the fight that's going on in Seattle, or maybe not, sort of how to hold companies accountable for some of the change and make them pay for some of the costs? Is that happening in Seattle?
Yeah, we haven't seen that kind of explanation for why Amazon wanted to leave here. We did hear, the Chamber of Commerce said that Seattle was creating an unfriendly business environment, and much of the political conversation here has been around holding, people are recognizing the forces at play and saying, do we need to hold someone more accountable? Is it developers, or is it companies through some kind of head tax, or do we need to tax the rich? You know, these are the kinds of conversations going on now. Amazon paid a lot of money to the Chamber of Commerce to support them, but it's not fair to say that's Amazon's perspective.
We're talking about the impact of HQ2, or at least the prospective impact of HQ2 today on the State of Things. The podcast out of KUOW Primed is taking a look at what impact Amazon has had on that city as cities around the country vie to become the home of the next headquarters. And this is the conversation, is it not, Carolyn? And I suppose maybe knowing what's happening in Seattle would be helpful for these other cities. If you imagine that you have an economy in your city and higher income and more business opportunities support that economy, then I suppose you want HQ2. But if you're asking yourself, well, what about the modest income people? What about the teachers and the police officers and the firefighters? Where are they going to go? That's another economy that this becomes the tension in the fight over how to attract and keep these big businesses. Is it playing out in Seattle? Because obviously this is a tech hub. It's a place where people still, I assume, want to go to hold their businesses. Have you found that this debate is putting a lid on the desire of other companies to move to Seattle, Carolyn?
We haven't actually seen many signs of that. I think that, what's driving us to do this podcast is to help people understand that there are economic development reasons to want an HQ2. You know, if you have the right tax system, it can definitely improve a government's financial situation. It can definitely redevelop a dead area. But it doesn't really change the lives of residents who are not directly employed in the industry that is being brought to town. I talked about the podcast yesterday with my cashier at the grocery store, and her immediate reaction was to say, well, thank goodness, somebody has to tell these other cities that you don't necessarily get the prosperity, but you sure get the problems. Everybody here gets the problems.
Well, you talk about the right tax system. That right tax system will impose some kind of pain on the company, and that's when they say, I don't want you. I'm going to go someplace that's not going to make me do this. And
No. I mean, an income tax would help. I mean, we don't have an income tax in Washington State. And so that means that we have failed to actualize even on the receipts we could have if we were able to tax people on incomes, on the healthy incomes that they're making in this tech hub. But we're not really able to do that.
Joshua, what are some of the other items on the agenda when it comes to policymakers in the Seattle area to deal with some of what's happened just in the last 10 years?
Well, there's a huge push to try to ramp up the construction of affordable housing. And some of that means, looking at inventive ways of changing the zoning in neighborhoods so that you can pack more places to live in. I mean, this is one of the root problems, is there is such a scarcity of housing in the region, even though we have so many more new people coming to the region. We have 57 people moving here every day, and we're only building 18 places to live every day. So that creates a shortage. And in that environment of shortage, there is intense competition, and the people who are making $100,000 at these tech jobs have a distinct advantage. And that scarcity is what's driving many of these problems.
Joshua McNichols and Carolyn Adolph, reporters with NPR member station KUOW in Seattle, Washington. Their new podcast is called Primed, and it explores how Amazon has changed that city. Joshua and Carolyn, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the podcast and our show at our website, stateofthings.org, a program produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.